Boyd, and the shot from reach, and that's a really fine save by Shea.
Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Richard.
Hello.
How are you endeared to Luton Town fans?
I wouldn't say that it's a particularly negative relationship. However, obviously, I did play for Watford for a long period of time, so I wouldn't say it's positive, but I actually never played against them, believe it or not.
Never played in that derby?
No, they were always in leagues below us.
Oh, an early dig.
Mm.
Well, okay. This week's guest is a goalkeeper who shares a similar story to that of the club he currently plays for. Starting in the top flight with Arsenal, where Luton Town once were, he somewhat unexpectedly drifted into non-league, where Luton Town once went, before a rapid rise back to pro football and back up the leagues into the Championship, where both he and, of course, Luton Town now are. He's won the double, he's been a player of the year, he's bagged a combined 3 promotions, and he's even got a golden glove to boot. James Shea, welcome to the Goalkeeper. Keepers Union podcast.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much. Thank you, miss.
Mate, it's great to have you on. We're going to start with a couple of classic first game stories, which we always love on this show. And the first one I want to begin with is your first ever senior appearance. You were with Arsenal at the time, but you were on loan at Dagenham and Redbridge in League Two, opening day of the season against Macclesfield. You came on as a sub. No shock there. Any listeners to the show will know that my astonishment at the fact that every goalkeeper seems to make his debut as a sub. Chris Lewington was sent off late in the game.
Yeah, that's right.
Dagenham won 1-0. You kept a clean sheet. You were on the pitch only for 10 minutes. Am I right in thinking there's two things here? You were both ill and you got a yellow card.
You're half right. I'd done my ankle in the week before in the build-up to the game, and so I missed a few days training. And then Chrissy played, and he played really well, to be fair. Done really well. I think it was a long ball over the top where he come out, he got sent off. And there was only about 10 minutes to go. And we were 1-0 up, and it had been a great win. It was a great start to the season for us. So Chrissy's come off, I've had to come on. And I'll never forget, our defender at the time, Mark Arbour, he said to me, "Stay on your side, do not move." And I thought to myself, "I'm not going to move. Do not move. Whatever you do, do not move." And as the player lined up, he shot and it went to my side, and I thought, and I saved it. I got it wide. It went for a corner. I thought, thank God I didn't move. I was so nervous to come on. What's it like being a goalkeeper? To come on in the last, whenever to come on, it's horrible because you're not in the game or anything. And to come on at any time, it's just horrible. And to have to make a save straight away, I was nervous, I'm not going to lie to you.
Do you know what's interesting? So as of recording this, it's not long after Claudio Bravo came on for Edison in the European Cup, wasn't it?
Champions League.
And to be honest, he ends up getting sent off in the game. There's a couple of moments where you could see that he was visibly nervous. And it's something that, I mean, I only ever came on in my career 3 times. And I remember it's a very different feeling because you instantly have to get up to speed with the game. You might not have played for a little while. How did you deal with it? You said that you were nervous, especially making your debut as well. Did you feel like you were prepared? Were you glad in a way that you just got thrown in like that?
Yeah, I was in a way because I've never played men's football in my life before, so I didn't really know what to expect. And I was just used to playing under 18, under 21 football, reserve football, where, let's face it, it didn't really matter. It didn't have much on it. It was just another game of football. But when I went on loan, I found it was men's football. It meant something to the people. It meant something to the players. They wanted to win. They would do anything they could to win. And you just didn't want to let anyone down. That's what it was at the end of the day. You didn't want to let no one down, and you want to do your job. So I knew if I come on, and where was winning 1-0, I thought, you don't want to make a mistake to draw the game or do anything wrong. You want to do well and hopefully get that win. And thankfully we did. I remember coming on, I had to make a couple of saves, come out for a cross. I got smashed. I'll never forget that. I got smashed by a big centre half, done me and everything. So it was an interesting 10 minutes, it was.
It's funny, actually. We've had John Ruddy on the podcast. He said exactly the same thing, that at that level, they really want to win, those guys, because a lot of them are also playing for bonuses and they've got wives and kids and families to think about. So those games are massively important. And I suppose when you come down from the Premier League to begin with, you're probably not quite aware of that. But there's another story as well that I want to touch on. That is the one with Harrow Borough. Now, this was a bonkers first meet for you with your teammates. You joined them from Needham Market. We'll get onto all of that later. Soham Town, I think, was the game. But rather than join the coach at the ground, you met them at South Mim Services. Is this right? And there was a bit of a debacle there.
Yeah, so it was my first first game, the manager, Dave Anderson, he said, it's a bit of a journey, but it's easier for you because where I'd come from, I could meet at South Mimms, he said to us. Just park your car there and jump on the coach and then we'll go up. I said, yeah, that's perfect. So I get to South Mimms and then all of a sudden, the traffic's building up and the coach can't get to me. So now, I've ended up having to drive all the way to Soham Town, which was a good couple of hours, but you're stuck in traffic as well. And you're thinking, am I going to get there? Am I going to be late? I've never met none of the boys before or anything. I'm just turning up to play a game. It was my first game. It was a cup game. It was a cup. There's so many cups in the non-league. I couldn't tell you which one it was or anything. But I turned up. It was pitch black. It was about 10 people there. But I'm not going to lie, I absolutely loved it. Loved every single minute of it. I did that, especially at Harrogate and Needham Market. The best thing I've ever done for my career. I just wish I'd done it 3 or 4 years earlier than when I had to.
That was essentially your first taste of life after Arsenal. And I guess we'll come on to it, I suppose, because Arsenal is where it all began. You're Islington born. Yep. You won the youth double, like we said at the top, the Prem Academy League and the FA Youth Cup, annihilating Liverpool in that final. At the time, I suppose for you, you're a young lad, you're coming up, you must have thought it was plain sailing from there. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, probably, yeah. You know what it was as well? I was comfortable. I was really comfortable at Arsenal. I went on loan to Dagenham. I didn't really play. I went back to Arsenal. And I stayed to Arsenal until I was about 22. And all of a sudden, I got to 22. I've been released by Arsenal. And I hadn't played men's football. And I'm not going to lie, I thought I'd been at Arsenal for so long, been on the bench in the Champions League. I thought I'd comfortably get another club. And nothing happened. I couldn't get nothing. I couldn't even get a trial or anything anywhere. And it was a shock, to be honest. I thought, what's going to happen to myself now? Because nothing was happening. I thought, where am I going to do? What will I do? And it's scary because football was all I known. When nothing was coming up, I thought to myself, I'm going to have to get a job here or I'm going to have to do something. And I didn't have a clue.
And also, just to add to that, because I guess that's the point when, and I guess at that point you'd have had an agent, and that's where, yes, you know, people talk a lot about the role of agents in the game, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be quite interested in that. But I guess that's the point where you'd have been calling on your agent and hoping that they would have lined up trials.
Yes, exactly. And I spoke to my agent. To be honest, I didn't really have to speak to my agent, especially when I was growing up at Arsenal. When I ever got a new contract, he'd come and do me contract. And that was all I really spoke to him about, really. Mm. But when I actually needed my agent, I felt let down, not gonna lie. I did, because I couldn't get nothing. Mm. I didn't have anything, really. And I spoke to him, and he always said, something to come up. But nothing was coming up. And so the year I got released, so the new season started, I actually spoke to my goalkeeping coach that was still at Arsenal at the time, Tony Roberts. And he said, do you want to come in and just keep yourself ticking over for something to come up? I said, yeah, that'd be great. So I ended up going back to Arsenal for pretty much that whole season and kept myself training while I was still at Harrow Borough and the time I was at Needham Market.
Obviously, I was fortunate in that I was with Watford for a long period of time and signed a lot of contracts with them until I finally left and went to Brentford. But there were a few occasions when I did nearly leave, and certainly four occasions in particular where I knew there was a bit of interest, but each time I got turned down because I wasn't 6'4", or at least that's what I was told at the time. Now, I know we're probably a similar height where, you know, we're not small, but in goalkeeping terms, this idea that so many managers, in fact, so many clubs now, they've got a philosophy whereby if you're not 6'4", they don't even look at you. Now, I wanted to know whether that played a part as well, because it's like you say, you go from being on the bench in the Champions League to suddenly not finding a club in the Football League. It doesn't make sense. And obviously, as a goalkeeper, the skills you have, the attributes you have are more than good enough to play at a very good level. Did you find that the fact that you're not 6'4", had an impact?
I reckon so. Especially in my early years as well. I actually got released from Arsenal. They let me go when I was 16 because I weren't big enough.
Right.
Okay. I actually got released and in the end, they needed another goalkeeper because they only had one youth team goalkeeper. So they basically just took me again just to add another goalkeeper. And then I just kept getting another contract. But I do think that hindered me. I weren't 6'4". I weren't massive or anything like that. And I do think that's the first thing scouts or coaches look for is he big enough? Not if he's good enough or anything like that. I think the first thing they look for is how big is he?
Tony Roberts there, obviously, he said to you to come back into training. What was Arsene Wenger like at that time as well? Was he welcoming to you to just join in with the lads? And is that what you were doing? Were you joining in with the first team again?
Yeah, Boss was absolutely brilliant with me.
Boss, love that.
He was absolutely brilliant for me. I'll never forget. The first day I went back when they said, Tony said, oh, to come in, I thought I'd just be with like the youth team, train with the youth goalkeepers and everything like that. I weren't. He took me back and I was training with the first team every single day. Every day I was. And it was unbelievable. I said to him, thanks for just coming in and training. He said, no. Anytime, whenever you want to come in, just come in. Keep yourself ticking over until you do finally get a club. I couldn't thank him enough. And it was the best thing for me because it kept me going, because otherwise I would have just been sitting at home doing nothing, really. And Tony actually got me to Harrow Borough, funny enough, because he knew the manager. But it was the best thing for me because I was still training every single day, but I was getting the game time at Harrow Borough.
What was his knowledge like of goalkeepers, Arsene Wenger? Because a conversation we also have on the podcast quite a lot is when we speak to certain goalkeepers or goalkeeper coaches, and the fact that there is this sometimes odd relationship with a manager who perhaps doesn't know exactly what goalkeepers need. And of course, that's where the goalkeeper coach is very important. But what was Arsene Wenger like in terms of dealing with the goalkeepers and the way that he wanted to develop them?
To be honest, he didn't really do much for the goalkeepers, if I'm honest. It was more left to the goalkeeping coaches to manage, to get on with. And then whenever they needed goalkeepers for the session, the goalkeepers would just go over, really. He didn't specifically want your goalkeeper to do this, do that, or anything like that. He just, whenever you needed a goalkeeper, you'd go over.
I wanted to ask you about Tony Roberts as well. We talk about different goalkeeper coaches, and he's one of the best. Obviously, I know he does a lot of work with, he's worked with Wales first team, Swansea as well, and of course Arsenal. And I know a few goalkeepers that work with him that can't speak highly enough about him. How is he to work with?
Brilliant. He's probably the best goalkeeping coach I've ever had, if I'm honest. He was absolutely brilliant. To be fair, I've been very, very lucky with goalkeeping coaches. Everywhere I've been, I've had good goalkeeping coaches, but he's probably the biggest influence on my career because, like me, he weren't the biggest, so he knew where we were coming from, and he was absolutely brilliant. Every day you'd go out, you'd enjoy the session, you'd work hard, but you'd enjoy it, and you know you'd be learning as well. And it don't surprise me, everyone that goes with him just wants to train with him. Even the first team goalkeeper, he weren't the first team goalkeeping coach at the time, but the first team goalkeeping coaches goalkeepers actually wanted just to train with Tony. It was frightening, if I'm honest. Everyone just wanted to work with Tony because when you work, you work. But in between, you can have a joke and a laugh, which is the way you want it. You want to go into work every day and enjoy your day, and you know you would, but you'd also work hard as well.
Let's talk about the goalkeepers you learned from as well at Arsenal, the keepers that were there during your time. I think Almunia was there, Lukas Fabianski, Wojciech Szczesny, of course, was there, Vito Manone. Jens Lehmann returned for a bit as well. What was he like?
When he came, I don't really know him the first time he was there, but the second time, he come back more of an old head. He knew he weren't going to play. He was just coming in as a backup to Almunia at the time, really, because they all had that drama before, like they didn't get on. And I didn't know nothing about or anything like that, to be honest. But when they come back, they was all best friends. And he knew he was coming back to more of an older head to give some experience, to give some guidance to all the other players and everything, really. And to be fair, he was great to work off. He'd talk to you every single day about goalkeeping. I'll never forget, he'd always say to me, never wear moulded studs. Never wear moulded studs. The way he'd set up, he'd have his shin pads on every day. He'd have a box on.
A box?
A modern day professional.
Do you know what I've heard? It's funny because I remember hearing that when I was playing, and then we all tried it at the time because we all heard that he was... Because, of course, when you're coming out and you actually think about it, you're coming out and the way in which the goalkeeper spread, even more so now where you're effectively doing the splits and that kind of side-on motion, getting your hands down, it's a really exposed area. So Jens Lehmann was the first who did that. And I know a few that tried to do it. I know David Button wears a box. That's another good example.
Still now,
yeah,
it?
A lot of them do, because I think... And it does make sense.
I'm not going to lie. I did try it. I just couldn't get on with it.
No, I know. I was the same. It was you're really aware that you're wearing it all the time.
Yeah. And he had the biggest hands you'd ever see. He wore the biggest gloves. His gloves were absolutely massive.
Yeah.
They must have been, no joke, two sizes too big for him. Because I tried them on. I remember he had these personalised night gloves he used to wear. And they must have been a size 12 or 13. I'm thinking, how on earth is he putting his hands on that? They were massive, they were.
Ridiculous, like the big foam fingers that you used to get when you'd go to the football game. Yeah.
Surely you'd want as well, because there's always been tales over the years of certain footballers wearing boots a couple of sizes too small for them because they want them to be really fitted. Obviously now not so much of an issue with the fact that boots are moulded specifically for certain players. But as a goalkeeper, I'm presuming you want your gloves to be as tight as possible.
That's like me. I like them quite snug. But he was the complete opposite, I thought, because his gloves were massive. And he had big hands, but not size 13 hands.
I love that. Do you know what? When you hear or when you see of a goalkeeper who is quite eccentric, often the tales behind the scenes aren't as great. You tend to hear, oh, do you know what, he's just a normal bloke. But I love the fact that Jens Lehmann was a bit of a kook as well. And Chesney as well, I suppose, is a bit like that. He's more open, I suppose, in his eccentricity off the pitch.
Yeah, I grew up with, like, when I first signed my scholarship forms and everything, it was me and him. So I grew up with Wojciech, and he was another one. Some of the things he'd get up to, you think, what's he doing that for? Why is he doing that? But that was just him. He was a very, very good goalkeeper. And to be fair, he knew he was a good goalkeeper as well. He could back it up.
Yeah. He was always... He came to Brentford, actually, before I went to Brentford. And obviously, apparently one of the most confident lads. So I remember them talking about an injury that he got at Arsenal when he was in the... I remember it was actually a public thing, I think, where he... were you there then when he got quite a bad injury? Did he break his wrists or something when he was doing weights?
Yeah. That was... That's bullshit, though, being stupid.
I remember hearing that basically he's doing weights without shoes on. I think he was doing it with flip-flops on and slipped over and broke his wrist. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that it was. I'm not going to lie, it probably done me a favour because he was out, I had to play. That probably got me my first pro deal, I'm not going to lie to you.
There we go. A couple of the other keepers that were there in the reserves with you as well, Emiliano Martinez and Dejan Iliev as well. I'm fascinated by this because it's been a while since you left Arsenal, but both of those players still on the books. Of course, Martinez getting a few games this season.
Yeah, I remember when Emi came in, he couldn't speak a word of English, and he was very top heavy. He was a big boy. He was, but his technique for like the sidewinder was, I mean, unbelievable. He would pick you out 50, 60 yards away, and he would find you all day long. But technically wise, he weren't the best. He weren't the best at all. But there was something there you could work with him. He had the frame. He was 6 foot. 3, 6 foot 4, strong boy. He's just got better and better and better. Technically, like I said, he weren't the best when he first started, but you can work on that. And you look at him now, and he's flying at the minute. He went on loan last year to Reading, and they loved him there. They did. They absolutely loved him. And when he's played, he's done well for the Arsenal.
Well, just before we move on from Arsenal, I just want to quickly go back to that youth side that you were a part of, because this one's quite intriguing in the sense that it was that post. Moving to Emirates era, Arsenal hadn't won a trophy. You guys obviously came along and won the double, as I said. When you look at the players in that side, of course, Jack Wilshere went on to play for the first team. Francis Coquelin went on to play for the first team. Of course, those are both now at West Ham and Valencia, respectively. You've got the likes of Cole Bartley, a regular at West Brom now. Luke Ayling doing well at Leeds. Mm-hmm. Henry Lansbury, on the flip side, can't really get a game at Villa, but still in the top flight. And then you've got the likes of J. Emmanuel Thomas. He's playing in Thailand. And Sanchez Watt, who is with Worldstone in the National League South. You've also got Emmanuel Frimpong, the outspoken Emmanuel Frimpong, and Tom Cruise, of course. Who can forget Tom Cruise? They've both retired. So I know at the time there was quite a bit of pressure on those lads to produce and perhaps be the next wave of Arsenal superstars coming through. As the goalkeeper then, did you feel that weight of expectation on your shoulders?
Not really me, because I was never like the standout, one of the golden boys of my age group, if I'm honest. I weren't one of them. You look at the golden boys were like your J. Emmanuel Thomas, your Henry Lansbury, your Jack Wilshere's. They were the main ones of that group. Even Luke Ayling. Luke Ayling, one of the best players in our age group, but he had one of the best careers. And that's because the way he is, he'd give you 100%. every single day of the week. And he, fair play to him, he's been absolutely brilliant. But with the golden boys of our age group, some of them have gone on to have great careers and some have just filtered away. But everyone catches up to you at some point. You can be the best player at 17, 18, but come 20, 21, 22, everyone else catches up with you. And you got to keep going in that direction or other people will catch you and then go past you. And that's what's happened to some of them. Like Tommy was my best mate at Arsenal, Tom Cruise, and he played in the Champions League. And unfortunately, he's not playing no more. And it's a shame because he had a great left foot, was a good player, but he went on loan a couple of times and it just didn't happen for him. And to be fair, you do need that slice of luck to go your way sometimes at important times. It's just one of them things. It's part and parcel. It's the horrible side of football, which people don't really see. You give everything. You train 4 or 5 times a week, growing up and everything. You give your life to it, and then all of a sudden you're not in it, and then you've got to go get a normal job. And it's horrible to see.
Well, it's something I wanted to ask you about, actually, because we see now, and I suppose today, Chelsea are a good example, where they've got so many players, and in fairness, Chelsea do it very well, where they've got all these players, younger players, going out on loan here, there and everywhere, but players that at a young age might be there till they're 21, 22, 23 sometimes, and we don't know who they are, but they might be on pretty good money, pretty comfortable, at a good club, going in, training every day without necessarily building a name for themselves. And then all of a sudden they might get released at the age of 22, 23, and then they might have to drop 2, 3, 4 leagues sometimes to then build a career, which I guess could be a drop in wages. Also, a drop in standards, because you go from a Chelsea environment, an Arsenal environment like you had, to suddenly going somewhere that's completely different. And also, yeah. I guess having that drop, I'm guessing financially you would have had a drop when you did drop down, and then trying to build your way back up. How is it like mentally, you know, for some of these players that have been playing at an Arsenal, you're putting on an Arsenal shirt week in, week out, then all of a sudden you're not anymore. Like, how did you find that mentally?
Because I was training at Arsenal, even though I weren't signed, I felt I was still a part of it in a way. I just weren't getting paid, which is weird. But I was thoroughly enjoying myself because I was playing on the Saturday, on the Tuesday, and on some week, because they had games for fun, you go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And to be fair, I didn't really think about money side of it because such as I had a little bit of money to saved up from my Arsenal when I was actually signed at Arsenal. And that got me through the year where I was hardly on anything at Harrow Borough. And then really my first season at Wimbledon, it got me through them 2 years. But I just wanted a chance to get into the Football League. I just wanted a chance to play to show what I can do. And then it was down to me then. It was up to me what... Thankfully, I got that little bit of luck that I needed to get into Wimbledon.
He worked some space nicely here in the effort, and it's Shea who turns it away. Really good save by James Shea.
You never got to make that first team appearance at Arsenal, but you were on the bench for a few games, as we said, notably an EFL Cup game against West Brom, an FA Cup clash with United in 2011. By the way, I do have to just make a very special mention for the save you made in a reserve team game against United. That's on YouTube. So if anybody wants to check out our Twitter at GK Union, that is one heck of a save, by the way, mate.
I should have been sent off just about in the first half before that. I'll never forget that.
Oh, really?
I dragged the player down, the referee waved play on.
There you go. Everything happens for a reason. And that last sub-appearance against Montpellier, the one that we mentioned in 2012. And then you moved on. And because of that last sub-appearance I've just mentioned there, Montpellier, that was used in a newspaper headline, wasn't it, to mark your next move. Montpellier to Market Men.
Market Men. The Ryman Northern League, it was.
Is that what
it
was?
The FA Cup game. Yeah, I was training and I got a phone call one day saying, do you fancy coming down playing an FA Cup game for us? I said, yeah, you know, it's a game, I'll go play. So I went down there. I turned up, there was a thing in the local paper, Montpellier to Market Men, and it stuck with me forever. I've never forgotten it. And so I turned up, I don't know no one there. I walked into the change room. How are you? Hello, hello, hello. And then I'll never forget, as you go out, when we got lined up to go out to the pitch, we played Sudbury. We did. It was like their local rivals as well. They've come out as well. And they've gone, one of the players gone, oh, here he is. Here's the superstar now. It's not Arsenal no more. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, no, what's going on here? I don't know. Well, I don't need this. And then so we've gone out and played. First cross coming, bang, smash me. absolutely smashed me. The fella was never going to get to the ball, but he just left one right on me. And I thought, right, here we go now. This is proper. This is proper men's football now. And ended up, I don't know why, I had a good game. We won 2-1. We got through to the next round. And then we got a game against Cambridge. But it was probably the best thing that could ever happen to me, going to play men's football. It weren't just another game to me. I was in it to win it. Because you could see the need of the players. They wanted to win. It was the FA Cup. It meant so much to them. They wanted to win. And even though I'd just turn up in the morning just to play, I felt real a part of it. I did. And we all had a good celebration after we did.
Just something I wanted to ask, because again, for a lot of the goalkeepers, I speak to a lot of the goalkeepers on here, and they might have only really experienced professional football, some of them. You know, the ones that are lucky enough to get their first loan into League Two, maybe, that might be the lowest that they go. Some who actually just go straight into a first team somewhere, so maybe never play lower than the Championship. For a goalkeeper, and this is something that you've seen such a difference, because you've played like reasonably low, and now you've played obviously Championship. How does it compare for a goalkeeper? Is it a case of it's much harder in the Championship, or does the fact that the lower you play, you've got different things to deal with, you've got the conditions, you've got bad pitches, you've got dreadful changing rooms and everything else that comes with playing? You mentioned there you're getting smashed a little bit more, the way in which you're playing, you're not able to play out as much, having to play longer. How do you compare the two, or can you compare the two, playing in the Championship and playing in the lower levels?
There's some of the pitches you play and you think... I remember playing Hampton and Richmond Borough one time, and the goalmouth was literally a swamp.
Yeah.
And you dive once and then you're just soaking for the rest of the game. Some of the pitches were horrible, but it made you. It toughened you up and everything. All I used to do was just boom it down as far as kick it away as far as you could, and just try and make saves. And you get smashed, and just like a normal non-league game. But to be fair, I find it the same thing. Like it's quicker, everything, the higher you go up. But you're still getting shots, crosses, distribution. You've got decisions to make. So in that sense, I find it the same. But it's just the quality. As you go higher, it's more and more. They get one chance. They're hitting the target all the time. And when you're in non-league, they'll miss the target. It's an easy save. But the pace of it all, the higher I've gone up, I've noticed, even from League Two to the Championship in the last couple of years, I find it's massive. Even the more football's being played in the lower league, it's more long ball, as you probably know. But I wouldn't change it. It's the best thing for any young goalkeeper, I think, to go out on loan, play men's football. And you've got to make mistakes. You've got to learn from your mistakes.
How long was the gap, James, between you leaving Arsenal and getting that move to Needham Market? And how did the phone call come about as well? Was it just from someone random? Was it through a connection within the game?
I think it was in October. So I just got a phone call one day. I can't remember how it came about, if I'm honest. The manager rang me, Mark Morsley from Needham Market, and he mentioned, would you like to come down and play a game? I said, yeah, that'd be great. I didn't realise how far Needham Market was, but it was a game. I went down for one game. Thankfully, we got through. And then they asked me, look, do you mind playing a league game on the Tuesday night for us? I said, yeah, no problem. And then the following week, we had the next FA Cup round. So I ended up playing three games for them. And then I got my big move to Harrow Borough.
Yeah, you got the move to Harrow Borough, of course, after that game against Cambridge. Finished 18th that season, but you got Player of the Year, which ultimately got you that move to AFC Wimbledon as well. Now, this one I find fascinating because of the linkage that we often talk about on the podcast and the other goalkeepers that we speak to, because you started well at Wimbledon that first season, 46 games, including the FA Cup fourth round tie, by the way, against Liverpool. So close on that occasion. 14 clean sheets in that season. But then in the second season, you suffered an injury. Now, Ben Wilson came in, but Keller Roos also came in. And we've had Keller Roos on this podcast, and he cites that time at Wimbledon as the moment where his career really sort of kick-started, in a sense, because he'd had numerous loan spells that hadn't really worked out. But that one at Wimbledon was the one that really worked out for him. Of course, he was in goal for the playoff push and the ultimate promotion, whereas you were then on the bench for it.
Yeah. Early on this season, I got a groin injury, so they ended up bringing Ben Wilson in. And then when I come back, Ben Wilson had something went on off field, which he happened, so he had to go back. And then I went back in, and to be honest, I weren't playing well. It was simple as that. I was not playing well. I was letting things I should have been saving. My confidence was gone, And I got dropped, and he brought Kelwin, Ardley, he brought Kelwin. And to be fair, Kel was brilliant for us. He'd done really, really well. I've been lucky with goalkeeping coach. We had a good goalkeeping coach at Wimbledon with Ashley Bayes. He's another one, it's kind of like Tony Roberts. Bubbly. If you ever know him, he's the bubbliest fella you'd ever meet. You can never be on a damn day with Bezo. He's just non-stop, 24/7, and that is the God's honest truth.
We actually, we've been told that a few times by certain guests.
We need to get him on the podcast, actually. I speak to Bezo quite a bit, and of course he's... Well, it's amazing the amount of goalkeepers that have at some point worked with Bezo, and the fact that he is such a big character, which, by the way, for a goalkeeper coach, and interesting to get your thoughts on this, because you work with so many goalkeeper coaches now, I assume, and obviously Kev Dearden being the goalkeeper coach you're working with now, who we'll touch on as well. Like, they've all got their different styles, but one of the biggest things for me was always the fact that if they were a little bit of a character, especially with days when you weren't necessarily feeling so good, maybe you made a mistake at the weekend or you needed someone to be there. Like, to have someone who's a bit of a character, for me, it always really helped.
Yeah, and to be fair, Bezo backed you. He'd back you 24/7.
Yeah.
Even when you know you're going for a bad time, he'd still back you. He'd back his goalkeeper to the day he dies, he will. But that's just him. And that's the way he worked. And he was absolutely brilliant. And it's no surprise, the man, he brought through a good few young goalkeepers as well that have gone on to get some moves from Wimbledon. A young boy, Will Mannion, went to Hull. He's had a good couple of goalkeepers go on loan that have done really well as well, like Kel. He had Ramsdale last year as well.
Yeah.
And had Longley.
George Long at Hull as well. Holner. Yeah.
Done really, really well. And he'd done me wonders as well. He took me to another level. He was great for me. Absolutely fantastic he was. But he is a character. I'm telling you now, he is something. He's special. That's what he is. He's like his hypo. He's like his hypo 24/7. He'll have about 8 cups of coffee before you've even got into training. He'd wake up at 5:30 in the morning, get the train. He'd be in before the groundsmen are to open up the gates. And that's him. He'd be the first one in, last one home every single day. But when you're out, like you said, when you have your bad days, he'd be the first one in, jumping about, singing. He'd be making a fool of himself, but you'd be laughing. You'd be laughing with him. But I don't want to get this. He is a good coach as well. He is a very good coach.
Yeah, I think that is sometimes often forgotten when someone is a character, isn't it? But I think, like you said there, the goalkeepers that he's brought through, certainly testament to his quality as a goalkeeper coach. And you, sadly, I suppose, in a sense, then moved on from Wimbledon after that time to Luton. But that's when things really started turning up for you. Mm-hmm. Marek Stek obviously came in initially as the number one from Sparta Prague. You and him battled it out. Initially, he had the nod. Then you came in towards the end of the season. It was 8 times. You saw the club finish as runners-up in League 2. Then you were a regular the following campaign when, of course, you went up as champions from League 1, which is the first time since 2007 that Luton have obviously done that. You're well aware of that, I'm sure. But we've got to talk clean sheets and golden gloves. Now, again, these are stats I'm sure have been thrown to you on numerous occasions, but we're just going to go over them again because I feel like we have to. Since making your league debut for Luton, that was the 24th of March 2018. In the space of a year, you made 25 clean sheets up to the 4-0 win over Doncaster on the 23rd of March 2019. Now, in terms of league clean sheets, no other goalkeeper in all top four divisions in that space of a year had managed more.
Yeah, I'm not just saying this. I was hardly doing anything. I'm not even going to lie. I had a back four that were solid as anything. And we had two fullbacks that have gone on to get moved to the Premier League now, which doesn't surprise you. They were class. I mean, two centre-halves were solid as a rock, Matty and Sonny. And to be fair, I was turning up some games not even touching the ball. And so we'd go 1-0 up and then you knew the game was done because we'd see it out, we'd keep the clean sheet. We went through a period where you just knew what was going to happen. And it was special because it was unbelievable at the time. We were just winning, constantly winning. Everyone knew their job. And thankfully, when I had to make a save, I'd make the save. I remember I had one game where we didn't play well. We had Rochdale away. And I had to make a few saves that day. And that was probably the one game last year where I earned a good clean sheet there.
Do you know what?
Apart from that, I was showing up and not having much to do, if I'm honest.
Do you know, you're being, I think you're being modest, actually. I came to So what was it? I've come to a few games. I always have to be a bit careful when I come to Luton. Obviously, with my Watford history, I wear a bit of a disguise when I sneak myself in there. But I was certainly at, I think it was Mansfield the season before, but it was Barnsley last season, which obviously was a big game between you two. And then this season recently came to the Bristol City game as well. And it's not so... And by the way, Bristol City, you were very, very busy. I appreciate that's this season. And you were fantastic that day. You guys, of course, won 3-0. Great clean sheet. But even last season, where you're saying you didn't have necessarily anything to do, but the thing that I saw in both the Bristol City game and the Barnsley game last season was that understanding, which I think the understanding between the defence and the goalkeeper, the communication, it's things where I suppose we talk to younger goalkeepers about cutting off danger at source, you know, seeing how quick you are off your line, the way in which you're comfortable playing out, you're hitting clever areas. It was more the intelligence that you seem to play with, that it's not necessarily about making saves, which is a big thing that we talk to, you know, certainly young goalkeepers listening in. Naturally, you'll see the David De Gea top corner save and we all want to replicate that, but actually, in terms of building a solid game, a lot of it is actually being that calm presence at the back. And you seem to have that. And certainly the relationship you seem to have with your defence is very good.
Yeah, especially last year. Like, I wouldn't have many saves to make in games. And let's face it, most games, unless you're getting peppered every week, saves probably not even half your game. It's your distribution, your reading of the game, talking to your defenders, trying to organise it so the ball don't actually get to you. I always enjoy them. If I have nothing to do, I feel like that's a great day's work. I really do. They're the best days when you have nothing to do because everything's going right in front of you. When it gets to you, I mean, then you've got to make the save. That's when you've got to come into it. But if you can stop it before it gets to you, that's your job done, really. But it's not just about making the saves. You've got to be another player these days, really. You've got to be able to play with your feet. You've got to be able to read the game, try and read through balls and stuff like that. And I was fortunate enough, I grew up being an actual player. I weren't really a goalkeeper. I didn't really take it seriously until I was about 14, 15, if I'm honest.
That's amazing, because we had that with John Ruddy and Roy Carroll as well, James. They started when they were 14.
Yeah, I was at Arsenal from 10, but I was playing for my little local team out on pitch till I was 14, 15, and then I had to start taking being in goal more seriously. But if I get a chance to go out, do a keep ball session, do a little rondo or anything like that, I'm all for it. I absolutely love it. I thoroughly enjoy it. I do, because one, I feel like it helps me as a goalkeeper, being able to play with the ball, and I feel like the defenders can trust me when they got to pass it back to us, or whenever they feel under pressure, they can use me. Because you can't just be a goalkeeper. You've got to be able to play with the ball at your feet nowadays, because you've got to be another player, really.
Do you know what? I also find this fascinating, in the sense that part of the reason we started this podcast is because we find the position is often misunderstood. And there's always a gripe from Rich that a goalkeeper can have a great game and then make one mistake, and that's what everybody focuses on. Whereas what you've just said there, James, for me, is almost the other side of that, where you're saying, do you know what? I'm actually not really doing much. But because you're getting the clean sheet, you're actually then getting the plaudits. So it's sort of a really weird backward scenario.
Goalkeeping is a funny position. You can have a great game but still lose 3 or 4-0, play well, but at the end of the day, you're on the losing side, so it don't really matter. But that's just part and parcel of the goalkeeper. Like Rich said, you make one mistake, 9 times out of 10, it's going to cost a goal. A striker misses an open goal, no one really remembers that. But if a goalkeeper makes a mistake, it's a goal, and that's just the life. That's the life we chose as being a goalkeeper, really. You just got to try and deal with it. And it's hard, because no one likes making mistakes. It's the worst feeling in the world when you've made a mistake. No one... It's horrible, because you feel like you've let your team down, you let yourself down. It is part and parcel of football. You've got to try and learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, and you kept 19 clean sheets last season, like we said, in League One. That bagged you the Golden Glove Award. Shared it with Adam Davies, of course.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you look at the fortunes of the pair of you since then, bizarrely, Adam Davies not even getting a look in at Stoke City. Mm. Very strange, that situation. But the trophy itself, has that got pride of place on the mantelpiece?
Do you know where it is? I've just moved to a new house, but I've got a caravan in Sheerness. And I keep all my medals down there. So I've got a little mantelpiece on my caravan down in Sheerness. So I've got my Golden Glove and my free promotion medals all down there. I keep them down there, I do.
Hold on a second. You've got a caravan. In where? Sheerness?
Yeah.
I don't even know where that is.
It's in Kent.
Is it?
I had, it's a holiday. I'm not one you attach to the back of your car or anything like that. It's like a holiday home one. We had one growing up when I was younger, and then my brother bought one a few years ago, and then we went down there for one weekend. And then I've got a little girl. She absolutely loved it down there. And funny enough, there was a free plot, a spare plot right next to him. So we ended up getting one as well. So we go down there whenever we can, really. It's closed down there for the winter, but we enjoy it down there, we do.
Are they aware of that at Luton? Because that is a feature for the club website waiting to happen right there.
To be fair, we haven't used it as much as we should have done this year. I've just moved there, so it's been a bit tricky. But whenever we can, we try and go down there. It's easy because it's not too far away. But sometimes you either, especially in the holiday time, you either go away on abroad somewhere or you go down your caravan.
I love this. You see, we'll talk to some of the lads, they'll talk about their holidays in Vegas or Dubai, and you're just going down to your caravan in Kent. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Especially when you get like a weekend off or something. Instead of going away, getting on a flight or somewhere, it's just easy to go down your caravan. I know I've got my twin brother down there. He takes his kids down there. My little girl, she loves it down there, so all the kids can play. And we have a good time down there, we do.
The modern footballer. I love everything about that, James. And bringing it back into modern times, I suppose, the modern game as things stand. You are still at Luton, of course, in the Championship. Quite a battle you've got on your hands this season. Of course, Simon Sluga came in, a record fee for the club. He came in from Croatia, HNK Rijeka. And he started the season. You obviously have made the only two clean sheets for the club, actually, in the Carabao Cup win over Cardiff and that game that we keep mentioning against Bristol City. You've now reclaimed that number one spot, but it's a battle, a bit of a new experience for you?
Not really, to be honest. Everywhere I've gone, I've always had to fight. Even when I joined Wimbledon, they had Ross Warner there. He was the number one previously. So it was at me and him. And then when I first signed for Luton, it was at me and Stecky. So Stecky started. Thankfully, I got in front of Stecky, and it does me a favour. I enjoy the competition. I love it. The one year where I probably didn't have the competition is where I didn't play well. That's when they brought Kelwin, if I'm honest. The one year where I didn't have the competition. But I love going in thinking, right, I've got to be better than him today. I've got to be better than this one today. That's what I see it as. I go in every day, I've got to be better than him.
It's an interesting case with Sluga as well, because your first game obviously was on TV live on that Friday night against Middlesbrough. He made an error, I suppose you could say, in that game, and he's made a couple of others since then. Have you been on hand to help him through that? Because obviously this is his first experience of English football, and I guess it's a bit different for someone coming in.
Yeah, it's hard because he's come from a foreign country, a foreign league, and this is completely different to him. And he's a good goalkeeper. There's no doubting about that. It's hard because he's made a couple of mistakes, and he's actually made some unbelievable saves if you look through them. But people just remember the mistakes, and it was tough for me because I've gone from playing all last season. I wanted to start the season, the first season back in the Championship. I just bided my time. I kept my head down, worked hard, and thankfully I got a chance for the Bristol City game, and thankfully I've stayed in so far. But it's my job now to stay in. I've got to stay in because I know if I start playing bad, Simon will be back in. I don't want that.
Well, Graham Jones, your boss as well, said that you simply have to be at Luton Town because you've signed a new deal now. So your immediate future, I suppose, is at Kenilworth Road, or of course, when the club moves on from Kenilworth Road to the new stadium.
Yeah, I love it, honestly. I love going into training every day. I really do enjoy it. It's a great club to be at. And it helps because, let's face it, the last 2 years, all we've done really is pretty much win every other week. So it's a bit tougher this year where we haven't been winning as much as we'd like, but we knew this was going to happen. We've gone up to the Championship. It's a big step up, so we know we're not going to win every single week. So we know we're going to have some bad days. We had a bad day yesterday, but as long as we stay in the league, it'd be a great season for us.
Yeah, and before Rich gets on to his final question, James, I just want to very quickly touch on England. Now, you've not played for England, but you have trained with England. And, mate, I saw these pictures online and they're brilliant because I'm a bit disappointed they didn't give you the England training gear. It was at a time in 2012, qualifier against Bulgaria, a goalkeeper.
It's probably not England's fault that because it was very rushed.
Well, yeah, that's it, right? Rushed. They were training at London Colney. Talk us through it.
Well, they used to train at London Colney whenever they played at Wembley, so it was close to Wembley. And I was in the gym one day and someone came over to me and said, England need a goalkeeper. only had Joe Hart training. The other two were injured at the time. I can't remember who it was. Me being pretty much the only English goalkeeper there at the time, I've gone over to Jerry Payton, the first team goalkeeper coach, and I said, look, I think England need a goalkeeper. Is it, can I train? Can I go train with him? And he said, yeah, no problem. So as I've gone out to them, they're all walking out straight away. And I said, you need a goalkeeper? And they said yes. So I've just carried on walking with them. I didn't have time to change. I've got all my Arsenal gear on and everything. And then I was in, I don't forget, next morning I was in a few of the papers. Everyone's got black kit on and I'm in my bright red Arsenal
gear.
Standing there like a sore thumb.
So hang on, I didn't realise this. So you asked if you could train with England. They didn't come to Arsenal and say, look, have you got a spare keeper? You found out that they needed one and just were like, can I come and play?
I think they mentioned it to one of the Arsenal staff, saying they need a goalkeeper for training. Because to be fair, they do it quite a bit. Whenever they needed extra players, they'd take some of the youth boys would go train with England. Even when we had other countries there, we had Brazil there once, so a couple of boys got to train with Brazil. So we were lucky in that sense. They needed a goalkeeper one day, and I made myself busy, and I wanted to train with them. I said, can it be me? And they said, yeah, no problem. And it was a great experience. It was. I got chipped by Wayne Rooney.
Well, I tell you what, you're not alone there, mate.
We've got that in common, then. We've got that in common.
Someone else here definitely has been chipped by Wayne Rooney. Joe Hart. What was Joe Hart like? Because, again, another man we've had on the podcast, we get a lot of people talking about Joe Hart. And personally, from my perspective, I kind of feel like it's a bit of a sad situation now with Joe Hart being number two at Burnley Steel and not getting the game time, because this is a goalkeeper that inspired many a modern goalkeeper and really should still be a number one, at least somewhere.
I completely agree with you. He's too good to be sitting on the bench at the minute. Too good to it for it. But he was brilliant with us. He was absolutely brilliant. I'll never forget, I walked over, I'm nervous as anything, and he's come over, introduced himself to us. And to be fair, a lot of the players come over, introduced themselves to us, which is really nice of him. And so I was training with him, and he was talking to me like I was just a mate of his. He was brilliant, he was. And I'll never forget, every time England come back, go out of his way, I'll be training. He'd come over, he remembered my name, he'd come over, say, how are you, hello, how are you, which he didn't have to do. And I just thought that was absolutely brilliant of him to do that. He remembered me every single time he'd come back.
That's quality, that. Well, look, James, coming towards the close, been a fantastic interview. We always like to finish the interview, the podcast, with the same question. We always get a variety of answers, different answers. The question is, goalkeeping. What has goalkeeping given you?
It's given me a career. It's given me enjoyment. It's given me every single emotion you could think of as well, through bad times and good times. But I love it. I love goalkeeping. I love everything about it. I love making the saves. I love having the ball at my feet. I just love everything about goalkeeping. I can't specifically say one thing because there's so much to goalkeeping, but I love everything about it. I do.
James Shea, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Tell you what, I'll never forget that podcast.
No, fantastic.
I also delved into a bit of my London accent there, didn't I?
You did. It made me smile how many times you said mate.
Adaptable, mate. That's what they call me.
Is that what it's, chameleon?
Yeah, I just adapt to the environment I'm in and the people that I'm speaking to.
Well, there you go. There you go. No, I really enjoyed that. Fantastic interview.
The Boss. I like that.
Yeah.
And you hear that about Alex Ferguson, of course. A lot of Manchester United, ex-Manchester United players still refer to him as The Boss. It appears, I wasn't aware of this, that a lot of the ex-Arsenal players refer to Arsene Wenger as The Boss and The Gaffer. And to be fair, yeah, you are aware of this. Ian Wright is always calling him The Gaffer, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. No, and it's brilliant the way he spoke about his time. And again, such a positive character. The amount of times that, well, everything was so positive. And that actually says a lot. It's interesting talking to all these different goalkeepers, and there's varying degrees of positivity, but everybody seems to have strategies as to how they deal with things. And for me, it doesn't surprise me now, having spoke to him, how he's managed to bounce back. Because I think if you go from Arsenal and you go to the depths that he did, and I say depths, going from Arsenal, of course, it's depths, you know, but signing for Neiman Marcus on the back of being with Arsenal, that could destroy a lot of goalkeepers. And I think if your mentality isn't that positive, then it could be very easy to go. And when suddenly someone says to you, like you said, are you not Arsenal anymore? You could easily go into a negative mindset and thinking, wow, I'm really not Arsenal. And then the game might not go so well. And then suddenly a few games don't. And before you know it, you've just lost the love of, of football. But the fact that he loves football as much as he does, he loves goalkeeping as much as he does, he talks about everyone with such glowing praise when he talks about Arsenal, the experiences at Arsenal. That, to me, I think, to a large extent, is why he finds himself where he finds himself now.
And that story was brilliant, wasn't it? You ain't at Arsenal no more, son. You can imagine exactly the type of semi-pro footballer that was.
Yeah.
But like you said about the mindset, that was October. He got released from Arsenal, what, 1st of June is when it comes out, end of May. So that's quite a long period of not having a club. And like he said, not knowing what to do. I think his dad owns a building firm or something like that. So he thought, am I going to have to go in and do that? But he sat tight and he just got a random phone call to say, look, do you fancy a game?
Yeah, it's crazy. And he touched on it briefly and didn't go into too much depth. But I do wonder, if you're a player like that and you've played at the level he had, and of course being on the bench in, what, three games, wasn't it, for Arsenal in the end? So if you've been on the bench for three games for Arsenal, I can appreciate that he must have been a little bit disappointed with his representation at the time, because ultimately getting a trial is very much down to those around you. It's very difficult as a player, and I think a lot of players realise this, that you don't have the power to reach out to clubs yourself. Yeah, you can send the odd email, but it doesn't have a lot of power if it's coming from you, and more often than not, you won't necessarily speak to the people you need to speak to. So I'm shocked at the fact that he had to go as low as he did. Seeing how good he is now as well, I appreciate that he's not 6'4", and we touched on the fact that he's not. However, the ability that he's got, the qualities that he's got, he shouldn't ever have had to dip that low as far as I'm concerned. And I think the fact that he's got the personality he has allowed him to bounce back. But just think of the amount of goalkeepers, the amount of players that find themselves drifting out of the game because maybe they don't get given an opportunity when they do get released. Maybe they do fall out of love with the game because they do drop a little bit too far. And there might be so many players that we haven't seen because of something as simple as that.
Yeah, and Josh Vickers is a really good example of that as well. That he was at Arsenal. He was around 5 years below James Shea in his development. But he spent time on loan. He went to Canvey Island, went to Concord Rangers, and as a result, was able to get a club straight after being released from Arsenal, of course, now doing well at Lincoln City. And James Shea constantly said there, go out on loan, go to the lower league clubs, go to non-league and get your experience.
And he's spot on. It's what I say to young goalkeepers that I work with. I just think, and he made the point there, where it's a different challenge, whether you're playing in the Championship or you're playing in the Conference South or Ryman or whatever it might be. It's a different challenge because, yeah, the game's a lot quicker at Championship Premier League level, of course, and they're a lot more clinical. So you're not necessarily making as many saves. You're probably conceding more goals if you're playing for a team like Luton, who at the moment having a tough time in the Championship. However, you go and play lower down, the pitch is might not be so good. He told the story about where, and we've all experienced that, where your goal mouth is
in Richmond, yeah,
the quagmire. This is it. In fact, technically I signed there.
I was gonna say, right? Yeah, you didn't mention that.
No, I should have, shouldn't I? I never, it was, yeah, by the way, just on that, I signed there. I didn't turn up at all. It was basically in an emergency if needed. Martin Tyler, the commentator, was involved at the club and asked on a favour, so I did technically sign there, which I'm aware is on my wiki page, but I didn't even turn up, so it doesn't really count. But we've all been there where you've played in a goal mouth that is a quagmire, and actually trying to dive when you have no firm ground below you is almost impossible because you can't get the power to do it. So sometimes you can look an idiot for a goal, but you have no chance because you're in a quagmire. It's like sinking sand and you're trying to push off and make a great save. You just can't do it. And that's one of the many examples of how it's that much more difficult. I mentioned the change rooms. You might go in and the change rooms sometimes are tiny and you've got 16, 18 grown men that are expected to change in a shoebox. It's just, so there's so many other different things that come into play the lower down you go. I go back to my initial point though, the fact that he has the mentality that he does, I've got no doubt that's why he finds himself where he is now.
Yeah, real down-to-earth individual as well. And love the stories about Jens Lehmann, about Wojciech Szczesny coming through there, and the caravan. Who would have thought it, the caravan?
And I love that you mentioned it, down-to-earth. I think the fact that he is grounded, he still very much appreciates his time previously and his time now. And you just get the impression, touch wood, injury permitting, he gives the impression he'll play as long as he can. Especially if he keeps the love for it that he's currently got. There's no reason why he can't continue to play for a long, long time. And he's fantastic, by the way. I mentioned I've been to see him a few times myself. I saw him against Bristol City the other week. For me, he was man of the match in that game, especially given that it was his first league game of the season. Decision-making, intelligence as a goalkeeper, clever distribution, speed off his line, power. you do wonder, it's that classic one, a bit of a cliche, but if he was 6'4", not that it would necessarily make him a better goalkeeper, but more so the perception of others, the perception of managers. How many managers do we know that when they look at their goalkeeper, they want to see that monster in goal? He'll never be that. But the qualities that he's got, it doesn't surprise me that he's always at the top of the stats, which he was last season. He was the year before. This season, he's doing pretty well as well. And that's because he's such an intelligent, effective goalkeeper.
Yeah, top bloke. Very, very good podcast. Thoroughly enjoyed that for this week, Richard.
Thank you.
You're just reclining in your chair there again.
I was, which should we give some secrets away from behind the scenes?
Please do. If you did hear a thud.
Yeah, halfway through that podcast, I leaned back and I got trapped on the wall and I was floundering and I couldn't get back to my mic and you were giving me evils from across the room. So I do apologise for that.
Desperately trying to continue this professional operation. Oh, no. Very hard when you're dealing with amateurs.
When you're dealing with children.
Well, this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.